the biggest thing that we do is we contact every one of our alumni every month. Either myself or our board members picks up the phone and calls every veteran every month to make sure they're okay, see if there's anything they need, if their health is okay, and to follow up with them to make sure they keep fishing. We provide each veteran with what we call a fishing tackle pack, which is a spinning rod and reel, a medium action spinning rod and reel, a tackle box that's loaded with tackle. I am Alan with Hook, Line, and Heroes, and this is the Tom Rowland Podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the podcast today. You know, the veteran community is a community that is close to my heart. These guys, they sign on the dotted line. They go out. They defend our country. They make huge sacrifices and oftentimes come back with some issues that are kind of hard to deal with. PTSD, other issues. We're losing 22 veterans a day to suicide. And you know, there are individuals and organizations that are trying to help. And when I see an organization that's trying to help, especially when they try to do so through fishing, I am interested and want to talk to them about it. Hook, Line, and Heroes is one of those organizations. Alan McCoy is with us on the podcast today to tell us what he's doing to get these veterans out, take them fishing, reintegrate them into society in some instances, and otherwise just help them to relax and realize that people out there like me, we love you, man. We love you. You're a veteran. You've done your service. We appreciate it. And we're behind you. We're with you. We love you. And man, people like Alan are actually doing something about it and getting these guys out on the water and showing them a good time. And in a lot of cases, that can be incredibly beneficial. So here's Alan McCoy with Hook, Line, and Heroes. So Alan, how are you today?
Man, I'm doing fantastic. Just coming off a veteran trip yesterday in Charleston, South Carolina. We went offshore yesterday and took out three veterans, all battle buddies from the Operation Iraqi Freedom.
Nice.
And just had a fantastic day out on the water.
Where did you fish out of in Charleston?
We actually went out of Charleston Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
And we went out about 40 miles, 40, 50 miles. We were pretty close to the Gulf Stream and fished. We did a little bit of trolling and then did some bottom fishing to let them get a little bit of meat for the freezer as well. Had just a fantastic day. The weather was a picture perfect day for us. The seas were just flat. You could have been out there on a kayak. It was nice. So flat. And we ended up catching about an 18-pound African pompano.
All right.
And we caught seven kingfish. The biggest king was about 37 pounds.
Yeah.
And then limited out on vermilion snapper, caught some trigger fish, even caught a cobia, 34-inch cobia. We had to put him back.
Nice. There's a lot of African pompano up in that area, right?
Not really. Just starting to see them up this way. It's funny. The guide that we used actually caught one 2 days ago that was about the same size. It was in the 20-pound range. But, you know, I've been fishing out of here for almost 5 years, both inshore and offshore out of Charleston. And that's the first one I've seen here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who do you fish with up there?
When we go offshore, we go with a guide called Four Sons Charters.
Okay.
Out of the Ripley's Point Marina. And then inshore, we've been using, it's called the Real Deal Charters.
Gotcha.
Here in Charleston, and then now, starting actually Friday, I'm actually going to be running charters out of Charleston as well, inshore charters, redfish charters, as Cosmic Pelican Charters.
All right.
And I'll be working with the Real Deal Charters, and then I'll be doing our veteran trips as well to help us expand our dollars a little bit more.
Gotcha. So your veteran trips, that's the Hook, Line, and Heroes?
Yes.
Tell me how that started. What made you want to do that?
It's my father was a D-Day veteran, and he went in on the second wave on Omaha Beach and fought in the Battle of the Bulge and a lot of the major battles. So I kind of grew up with a family background, so to speak, dealing with PTSD. Back then, they called it
shell shock. Yeah, shell shock.
And, 40 years later, 50 years later, looking back and now dealing with PTSD veterans, I see all of the things that to me were normal when we were growing up, but were classic symptoms of PTSD.
What would those be? Like what? When you think
some of the classic symptoms are seclusion, not wanting a lot of social interaction, very recluse at times. Growing up, my father worked and he came home and he stayed inside. I mean, yeah, we did things as a family, but we didn't do a lot of social interaction with other families and stuff like that. So, flash temper, a hot tempered type of thing. That's a classic symptom as well. So, I was a teenager during the Vietnam War. I saw how our soldiers were treated in the Vietnam War. And about 6 years ago, I started seeing the way that our society was, for lack of a better term, forgetting or ignoring our heroes when they came back from Iraq, Afghanistan, so forth. Especially our wounded veterans. And being a strong faith background, Hook, Line, and Heroes was kind of a calling for me. I've fished my entire life, grew up in South Florida, fished the Keys, fished Florida, fished the West Coast. And, it was kind of, God kind of said, hey, you need to take your passions and you need to do something with them. And, so after a lot of research and a lot of prayer, and actually I was inspired by a show that I saw on TV, with a professional bass fisherman who took a veteran out fishing and the bonding that they had, I decided that's what our guys needed. They needed an opportunity to get out on the water. And, it's statistically proven that water is therapeutic. Mm. It provides relaxation. And so I started talking with my family, started trying to figure out a way that we could do something that accomplished a couple of things. First of all, is we wanted to provide that be able to provide that therapy that our guys need, the ability to get out and relax. One of the classic symptoms of PTSD is really the same as severe depression, in that you, for lack of a better term, cannot get away from your own mind. Your mind races all the time. So, I wanted to do something that was going to provide some relaxation, if even just for a day. The other thing I wanted to do was get them out into the obviously the beauty of the different waterways, a bucket list type thing for them. And then the last thing that I wanted to do was make it so they were the point of focus. It wasn't a fish and forget organization. It was an organization that continued the relationship after the fishing trip.
How do you do that?
We do it in many ways. The biggest thing that we do is we contact every one of our alumni every month. Either myself or our board members picks up the phone and calls every veteran every month to make sure they're okay, see if there's anything they need, if their health is okay, and to follow up with them to make sure they keep fishing. We provide each veteran with what we call a fishing tackle pack, which is a spinning rod and reel, a medium action spinning rod and reel, a tackle box that's loaded with tackle. And we want them to keep fishing. We want them to get out, even if it's by themselves, but to keep fishing, keep getting out on the water and relaxing. And then the other thing we give them is we give them a Bible. We recognize that there are many different religions and many different beliefs. And so we just give them the basis that they need if they want to study and read the Bible and have a relationship with God. We believe that is very beneficial in the healing process. So we provide them with those tools. We also have a newsletter that we put out quarterly, and we highlight trips from the past. We highlight current trips. We have a weekly Throwback Thursday post on all our social media where we highlight past trips and reach out to our veterans through social media. Mm-hmm. We do a lot on social media, on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram. So
how many trips have you done?
We've doubled in size every year. This year we'll do right around 40 trips.
40 trips. Wow. And a trip would be like a single person, or would that be a group of people, or what would that
typically be? Typically it's one-on-one. Mm-hmm. We like it to be one-on-one. If it's an offshore trip like we did yesterday, to justify the expense, if we have two veterans that want to go offshore in the same area, we will partner them up. And then we'll do two veterans when we go offshore. Rarely do we do anything more than that, because then it's difficult for me to provide them with the attention that they deserve. Mm-hmm. And, typically when we go out on a trip, I will not fish until the end of the day. When everybody else is getting tired, that's when I'll do a little bit of fishing to get my fishing fix for the day. But as the lead, the founder, the president, you know, my role is to, for lack of a better term, love on these guys and give them attention that they deserve, and basically cater to them all day long.
Mm-hmm. How does somebody find out about that? Like what? How does a veteran get in touch with your organization, or even find out that it even exists?
Well, we have a website, which is www.hookLineAndHeroes.org. We're a 501c3, and they can go on there and they can see our mission. They can see who our list of sponsors are. See what we're about. And then there is a nomination form on there. It's a very simple single page nomination form where they can tell us a little bit about them, tell us what their disability rating is, things like that. Or someone can nominate somebody using the same form to do that. And once that happens, that comes to my cell phone. And within 24 hours, I reach out to them and start the dialogue. Mm-hmm. I send them an application that they have to complete. And the application is more tells me information about them that helps me plan the trip, mm-hmm. Helps me provide the best guide that I can provide, make sure that it's a comfortable trip for them. And I can look at their disability and make a decision whether they shouldn't go offshore or whatever.
Right.
You know, depending on things. And then they have to send me proof of disability. They have to send me a copy of their DD-214, which is their discharge papers, just for a vetting process so that I can make sure that they are who they say they are. We right. probably get 10 applications a year where when I ask for that information, they just drop off the face of the earth.
Huh. Seriously?
Wow. Yeah. There's That's people crazy. Out there trying to get stuff for free all the time.
Yeah. But, you know, one of the things that you mentioned earlier, which I, you know, is kind of interesting, and I've worked with a lot of other veteran organizations to provide service dogs. We've done shows with Wounded Warrior Foundation and Healing Heroes, I think it was called. And it's been very rewarding to do that. And it's something that's close to my heart as well. But when you were talking about like some of the symptoms, you were saying that like reclusive behavior, not necessarily being antisocial, but also kind of not really, maybe you just say refraining from social situations a lot of times. A lot of times the veterans are, you know, very self-sufficient, or they have been all of their life. They're people that didn't really need a lot of help. And so a lot of times it's difficult for someone like that to reach out for help. Those are things that we've encountered in these other organizations. And so that's why I was asking, like, you know, it's one thing to, once you get the paperwork and everything, and someone has actually filled it out and, oh yeah, now it's a, I can see how that process would go, you know, and you can find the right trip and things can progress nicely. But what about the people that just are reluctant to go into a social situation or reluctant to reach out for help? Do you have any strategies to get in front of those people? I mean, that one form that you have is pretty nice. If somebody can nominate somebody that they see as having some issues or might benefit from your program. But What is, I mean, that's like a bigger question, not just to your organization, but overall, like, how do you make contact?
For me, fortunately so far, many, if not most of the people that we have taken out have been up and down the East Coast. I hold on to the applications or the nomination forms, and I continue to call, I continue to email each of the nominees. And in a lot of cases, you know, there's varying reasons, but in a lot of cases, over time, I gain their confidence because I continue to follow up and continue to show that I care. Mm-hmm. You know, there are instances where people are moving. There are instances, you know, I have a gentleman right now that for 6 or 7 months, every time we start talking about a trip, something happens and he has to have a surgery or he gets sick or whatever. And, you know, it's gotten to the point now where the conversations aren't as much about fishing as they are about how he's doing and things are going on in his life and so forth and so on. And he knows, and we both know that in time, he's going to get to a point where we can go fishing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I think more than anything, you know, I don't push them to get in front of them by any means. If the opportunity arises, I certainly will meet up with them and take them for lunch. If I'm in an area and I can meet up with them, I will do that because I want to, you know, I believe in the face-to-face aspect more than telephone. I'll even Zoom with them if I can. Mm-hmm. But more than anything, it's just what I found is it's just staying in touch with them. You know, the way I look at it is if somebody has taken the time to reach out through the nomination process, then that's signifying to me that that they need the help, sure, or they recognize the help. So I'm going to continue to do everything that I can do to make that happen for them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if it continues, if the process continues, I mean, you know, there gets, it gets to a point in conversations, the more you get to know people, that, you know, they're not trying to pull the wool over your eyes. And, you know, so in a situation like that, then I'll work to make it easier for them. And I'll make it so that I can get them on the water. Because mm-hmm. my ultimate goal is to get them on the water and get them to relax and get them to, for lack of a better term, re-engage. Because right. The military does a terrible, terrible job of that. And
of getting them to re-engage back into society.
Yeah. Oh yeah. They, you know, it, and I was just funny. I was just having this conversation last night with the guys that I fished with yesterday, you know, when, and most people don't know how the process works. I didn't serve, but I've been around it long enough that I know the process from what people have told me and what my dad experienced. But basically, when you go into the military in boot camp, they tear you down and they basically create a new family for you. You still have your biological family, but your family now becomes your brothers and sisters in the military. You go to battle, you get deployed and you go to battle and you lose your brothers and sisters. That's a traumatic experience, which is the cause for PTSD in a lot of cases, or most cases. They don't tell you how to re-engage back into society when you come back. They have a week-long program. I can't remember what it's called now, but they basically say, okay, here's your VA hospital. Here's your advocates. Here's the people that can help you re-engage. And if you need help, they can provide help for you. But they don't sit down with you and teach you how to adjust to situations and how to re-engage with society and what to expect once you're gone and you're separated from your military family. Mm-hmm. And, so, you know, that's why I am so passionate about this, because I believe that the time on the water allows them a period of relaxation to get away from all of the stress in their mind with trying to readjust and trying to reengage. And, you know, what do I do in this situation? What do I do in that situation? You know, one of the things that I hear so much about is guys that come back from a deployment and within a year they're divorced.
Yeah.
Because they just, you know, they don't want to talk about what they've been through, but at the same time, their wife or their spouse doesn't understand that they don't want to talk about that. And so they don't learn how to reintegrate into the marriage, into life, into business, whatever. You know, they're torn down and made for, and this is a poor terminology, but it's the truth. They're made killers. Their job is to defend the country and serve their new family and defend if it means taking a life. So that adjustment back and forth or back into society is very difficult.
Yeah.
If not, in a lot of cases, impossible. Then they go to the VA and all the VA does is pump them full of drugs, you know, numbs them basically.
Yeah. What kind of success stories have you seen through your organization or others that take people fishing and get them on the water?
Well, we we try to post a lot of we try to post a lot of the comments that our veterans make. One of the things that that we ask them at the end of the trip is, you know, what was the most the most exciting part of the trip. We asked them what they would tell another veteran about a trip, and that's how we gauge how their experience was and what benefit it was to them. And what we hear often is the relaxation and the camaraderie makes them feel normal again. Having the ability to just get out and laugh and have a good time. So, you know, I don't know how to gauge. I mean, one of the problems that we have in the grant world is we can't measure metrically the success. You can only measure it by how the veteran reacts and how they react on down the road, how they tell people about it, how they support and praise the organization.
But have you seen, you know, certain veterans that you've taken fishing and you have noticed a major change in them, or maybe you take them multiple times? And
absolutely. I mean, up until this point, now that I have my captain's license, I haven't taken them multiple times, but I see them getting involved in other activities that we do. I guess probably the biggest success story that I always share with people is a Purple Heart veteran. We take a lot of Purple Heart veterans, and one of our Purple Heart veterans hadn't fished since the Vietnam War. He grew up on the lake, and after the Vietnam War, he said all he wanted to do was just stay in the house and walk his dog. And after fishing with us, he carries his rod and reel in his car and his tackle box, and he fishes twice a week. And if he passes a pond, he stops and he fishes. And, you know, his comment to me was, you gave me an opportunity to feel normal and realize that I can enjoy life outside the house again.
Wow. That's awesome. That's awesome. You mentioned other activities that you do. What else do you do for them?
We have an event that's coming up in about 3 weeks. We do a fishing day for blind veterans, where we get all of our blind veterans from our geographical area together on a lake, and we provide buddies for them, and we do a barbecue lunch, and we just let them all fish all day long. Many, if not most, of our blind veterans do not want to go on boats. Simply because, to put it in their words, even though I have a life jacket on, if I fall overboard, which way do I swim?
Right.
Yeah. So, however, I have to say, we did take a blind veteran offshore off of North Carolina about 6 weeks ago, and he had a fantastic time. But, you know, so we provide the day fishing day for the visually impaired. We do a barbecue once a year for the Military Order of the Purple Heart, where we invite. We've got about in that organization about, I think, 275 members in the Charlotte, North Carolina area. So we do a barbecue for them once a year, and then we do twice a year, we do alumni events where we get our veterans together that we've taken out, and we usually get a venue on the water where they can fish and just have a day, giving them an opportunity to have peer-to-peer conversation and have their families there and relax on the water.
You know, so, I have a friend through the podcast. He's from Canada. His name's Lawrence Gunther, and he is an extremely accomplished blind angler. He might be a great person to have as a speaker or a guest at that organization, you know, at that function. He would be great. You should look him up, Lawrence Gunther. And he's got like a TV show and a podcast up in Canada. I think it's called Bluefish something. So Lawrence, I think, would be an excellent connection for you, especially in the, in the blind angling world. That guy's incredible. He fishes all kinds of water. Like, he has this dog that helps him, and he can go and fish trout rivers by himself. He fishes in bass tournaments and all kinds of stuff. And he usually has a partner that, you know, can drive the boat or whatever, but it's his rig. And that guy's incredible what he has been able to do. And then overall, just his attitude about, you know, he doesn't look at it as a disability at all, which is
right.
the case with a lot of people, like my friend Kyle Maynard, who was born a congenital quadriplegic amputee, and the guy's climbed Mount Kilimanjaro, and we went snorkeling and fishing in the Keys, and he's done so many other things. He was a wrestler, and he has, you know, he won an ESPY award, and he's just done some really cool stuff, including writing a book and doing lots and lots of things. And he also works a lot with the veterans, because he just has a different perspective on it. You know, he was born that way. He didn't lose his arms or legs. He was born that way. And so he has a special connection to people that come back, you know, that have lost limbs or whatever. And they look at him and he's like, man, I can do anything, you know, this isn't a disability. What Kyle Maynard says is, that always has stuck with me. He's like, I don't have a disability. He's like, the people that have negative self-talk, the people that have poor attitudes, that's a disability. Right. This, I don't have arms and legs, that's an inconvenience. That's what he said. And I was like, wow, that's
an amazing
attitude.
Excuse me. One of the things that I always talk when we take out a catastrophically wounded veteran that's lost limbs or lost use of a limb, one of the things that I always seem to get on a conversation with them about is the many blessings that they have, even though they have a loss, the many blessings that they have and how they can use those blessings to create a positive impact on other people. And, you know, it's much like giving, much like, you know, what we do through Hook, Line, and Heroes. You know, when you're able to help somebody or help somebody feel better about themselves, then that kind of heals other wounds, so to speak. And so that's what I try to encourage them to do, is to use their gifts and use their abilities to be able to help others cope.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a good strategy. You know, anytime, I mean, whenever you're feeling down, if you can help somebody else, all of a sudden you certainly feel better yourself.
Absolutely.
So what's the future here? What do you expect or hope for your organization? How many people do you hope to help in the future? How do you grow? What is going on?
Well, we're obviously, we want to grow. We've doubled in size every year since we started. You know, our ultimate goal is to go nationwide. You know, the biggest hurdle at this point for us is funding. You know, we're 100% volunteer. Everything that we do is based off of fundraising and based off of corporate donations and private donations. A little bit, about 87%. Of all of our donations go right back to the veteran, which is very high. You know, being 100% volunteer, we have very little overhead. So, you know, the next steps are being able to monetarily, as we get applications in from around the country, which we are getting, to be able to fly them to destinations and or me go to them to destinations. You know, it's a monetary thing. I mean, a perfect example that I have right now is when I interview the veterans, you know, I ask them what's your bucket list item for fishing. Hmm. And I want to take them, we want it to be a fishing experience for them that they will never forget. And, so I have two veterans in Texas right now that their bucket list item is to go fishing in the Florida Keys.
Nice.
And so I'm trying to raise money to make that happen. And, you know, it's for us being in North Carolina and them being in Texas, the logistics to get them and get us all in that place at the same time, not to mention the fact that the accommodations in the Keys are quite expensive. We just monetarily can't pull it together right now.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of our next step to raise our donation level to where we can do that. And then my ultimate goal when I founded Hook, Line & Heroes is, you know, if somebody wants to go to Costa Rica sail fishing, I want to be able to do that. I want to be able to provide that experience of a lifetime for our veterans. You know, people don't understand the sacrifice that our veterans give by signing on the line and agreeing to protect our country. You know, you're essentially putting your life and your family on hold to go and serve. And, you know, from my perspective, there isn't enough that we can do as Americans to show the respect and to pay our veterans back for what they do. Whether they're deployed and in combat or not, it's still a sacrifice to serve in the military and agree to protect our country.
For sure. I mean, lots of sacrifices. Not only are you risking your life, but you're also, you know, you're not getting paid a lot. Even the high level operators are not getting paid much. Yeah. And, you know, there are benefits and other things, but, you know, high level operators, it's a life that they're choosing, and it's a great life and it's a great job. And, but it doesn't reward you financially like being a football star or a baseball star, even though these guys are stars, of their own right in an incredibly competitive and incredibly physical, endeavor where only a few are selected. They're not rewarded financially like we do actors and athletes and other, you know, people that don't even have the skills that these people have. Yep. And, yep. It's certainly, you know, it's a choice, for sure, but they're definitely not being compensated. So or compensated to the degree that I think that they should be.
Yeah. Absolutely. But
then there's, you know, there's also the way that society and just people in general kind of view veterans today, and you know they should be the hero. I mean, they are the hero to a large portion of the country, but other people don't necessarily see it that way, I think, and that's kind of a sad commentary on the current
sure is
situation.
Yeah, we're fortunate that we're part of the fishing community, and the fishing community has a huge heart for our veterans. I have yet to meet someone, whether it's you know, in person in a particular town or even at ICAST. I was just at ICAST a couple of weeks ago, and everybody you talk to in the fishing community has a heart for our veterans. And I love that. Mm-hmm. I just really love that. And they have a heart for our country.
Yeah. What about the guides and the way that you're putting these trips together? Are you asking the guides to donate their time, or are you compensating the guides, or are they willingly donating their time? How does that work?
No, the majority, it's full price, and we're compensating them for what we do. That's our biggest expense, mm-hmm. is the guides and the ability to provide the best guide possible. You know, like I said earlier, I spend a lot of time trying to match up the guide and the boat to a specific species of fish that the veteran would like to catch, and finding the best option. And, you know, once in a while we'll get a 10% veteran discount, but the majority of the time it's full price.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, there's a lot of expenses that go into being a fishing guide, of course.
It
certainly is as an offshore guide, but one idea, you know, could be that, you know, if you found a group of guides scattered across the country that felt strongly about, you know, giving back to the veteran community, maybe you could get like a guide to donate just one day of the year, or maybe donate just his fee, you know, maybe the fuel's paid for and everything else is paid for. But if you had, you know, you got 300 guys that donate one day a year, now you have 300 days that you can go fishing. And, you know, it's a lot to ask, the guide community to do that, because the guide community's been tough, you know, with COVID, with water issues lately. It's been very difficult, but I know that the guide community has been a strong supporter of a lot of charity organizations, a lot of veteran organizations, and
yes, they
just,
are
just an idea, you know, if you had, you know, 10 guys donate one day, just one day, you know.
Well, to be honest with you, Tom, I don't ask. You know, everybody's got to make a living.
Right.
And I don't ask the guides to donate. You know, if somebody wants to do it and that's something that they want to do in their heart, that's great. But, you know, that's part of what we do. And that's part of our organization, and that expense is built in. And I'm going to pay what we have to pay, because that's what's most important to our veteran.
Yeah. Well, and you also want to support the guides so that they want absolutely. To work with you and continue to work with you and answer the phone when they see it's, you know, a number, instead of being like, oh man, that's going to be it's going to be a free trip. I don't know if I can do that.
And they have fun with us. I mean, you know, Four Sons Charters that I used yesterday, this is our sixth trip with them.
Nice.
And so that, you know, they know that when I call, that we're going to have a good time, and you know that I'm there to help them. I'm a second mate, for lack of a better term, and I'm there to help them be successful as well. So, not to mention the fact that we promote our guides on our social media. If there's specific guides that we use in a certain area, we promote them through social media as well. So.
Well, have you found that there's a certain type of trip, or a certain maybe inshore versus offshore, or freshwater versus saltwater, or something that has been kind of more effective than others, or are you just kind of basing what you do based upon what the veteran voices as their bucket list kind of thing that they'd like to do?
Probably 90% of what we do is based on what the veteran wants to do. You know, typically, excuse me, typically they're not specific as far as the types of fish that they want to catch, as much as they'll say, oh, I'd love to go offshore in Charleston, or I'd love to go offshore North Carolina, or I'd love to go offshore in Stuart, Florida, or whatever. And then, you know, and then we work from there to identify, you know, specific species or what we want to do. Mm-hmm. offshore has been very big this year. In years past, we've done kind of a 60-40 mix of freshwater, 60% saltwater, 40% freshwater. This year, it's been 95% saltwater. And we've done trips from this year, we've done trips from Stuart, Florida, all the way to the North Carolina coast, all up and down the East Coast. And in the past, redfish trips have been big for us, backcountry redfishing trips. This year, it hasn't been as big. Most everybody has wanted to fish offshore this year. So, which is interesting to me because, you know, in the past we've had the 60-40 mix. And so that's what we budget for. And then when you get into the meat and potatoes of the year and everybody wants to fish offshore, then it's like, I need to get more active in fundraising, you know?
Yeah, so, for sure. Yeah, the offshore is definitely more expensive, especially you are, man. It's 100 miles out there where you can get into deep water. I've fished up there a little bit, and man, the long boat rides up there compared to the Keys.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, yesterday we ran 2 hours to get out to the fishing spot, and you know, it's funny, 2 hours off of Charleston, you're in 90 feet of water.
I know.
You know, that's all. I know.
2 hours off of Key West, you're past Cuba.
Yeah. You know, like you've
gone a long way.
You know, I'm fortunate, you know, like I said, it's a calling for me. And so, as a result, I am retired. And, so I have no problems fishing anywhere. I love to fish and, you know, I fish every day. And, if somebody says I want to go to Pensacola or to Panama City or wherever, if I can make it happen, I'm going to make it happen.
Awesome, man. Well, you know, so, I love what you're doing for the veterans. That's something that is close to my heart as well. And, you know, you're making a difference if it's to a few people or to a lot of people, or, you know, you're making a difference, and I appreciate that very much. So I wish you the best of luck in what you're doing.
Thank you.
How do people help your cause? How do people get a hold of you?
They can contact me at alan@hookliningheroes.org, or they can reach out to me by cell phone, 704-591-5129. I mentioned our website earlier, www.hooklineandheroes.org. There is a donate tab on there where they can donate. And then we also have a monthly giving program called Healing Heroes. If somebody wants to just make a $25 a month donation, you know, that helps a lot when you get, you know, like you were talking about the guides. If you get a lot of people making $20 a month donations, it helps out. So a lot of different ways. I love to talk to corporations. I love to talk to individuals. I urge them to reach out to me and talk to them. I love to do Zoom calls to talk about what we do. And, you know, if the opportunity arises, I'll get on my truck and drive and meet face to face with somebody. I don't have a problem. I love networking and I love talking to people. So
that's awesome. Well, I hope what you do continues to double in size every single year, and you double next year and take twice as many people fishing. I know there's plenty of people out there that could use it. So thanks, Alan. I appreciate you coming on and telling us about what you're doing, and you know, best of luck to you and the organization, and certainly best of luck to all the veterans out there, whether you're taking part in this or taking part in something else. We're with you, man. We love you and we appreciate you. And thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you having me on and appreciate the time.
You bet.
Have a great day.
You bet. All right. Thanks.